This is Audible.
Random House Audio presents Star Wars, Fate of the Jedi, Outcast, by Aaron Alston. Read for you by Mark Thompson. The darkness was eternal, all-powerful, unchangeable. She stared into it, unblinking and unafraid. She was determined that it would not claim her. She had resisted it these many years. She would resist it forever, never despairing. It was unchangeable, but change would take place. The Force said so. Chapter 1. Galactic Alliance Diplomatic Shuttle, High Coruscant Orbit. One by one, the stars overhead began to disappear, swallowed by some enormous darkness interposing itself from above and behind the shuttle. Sharply pointed at its most forward position, broadening behind, the flood of blackness advanced, blotting out more and more of the unblinking starfield, until darkness was all there was to see. Then, all across the length and breadth of the ominous shape, lights came on. Blue and white running lights, tiny red hatch and security lights. Sudden glows from within transparent steel viewports, one large rectangular whiteness limned by atmosphere shields. The light showed the vast triangle to be the underside of an Imperial Star Destroyer, painted black. Forbidding a moment ago, now comparatively cheerful in its proper running configuration. It was the Galad Pellion, newly arrived from the Imperial Remnant, and its officers clearly knew how to put on a show. Jaina Solo, sitting with the others in the dimly lit passenger compartment of the government VIP shuttle, watched the entire display through the overhead transparisteel canopy and laughed out loud. The Bothan in the sumptuously padded chair next to hers gave her a curious look. His mottled red and tan fur twitched, either from suppressed irritation or embarrassment at Jaina's outburst.
"What do you find so amusing?"
"Oh, both the obviousness of it and the skill with which it was performed. It's so very, you used to think of us as dark and scary, but now we're just your stylish allies." Jaina lowered her voice so that her next comment would not carry to the passengers in the seats behind. "The press will love it. That image will play on the HoloNews broadcasts constantly. Mark my words."
"Was that little show a Jagged Fell detail?"
Jaina tilted her head, considering. "I don't know. He could have come up with it, but he usually doesn't spend his time planning displays or events. When he does, though, they're usually pretty effective."
The shuttle rose toward the Galad Pellion's main landing bay. In moments, it was through the square atmosphere barrier shield and drifting sideways to land on the deck nearby. The landing place was clearly marked. Hundreds of beings, most wearing gray Imperial uniforms or the distinctive white armor of the Imperial Stormtrooper, waited in the bay. And the one circular spot where none stood was just the right size for the Galactic Alliance shuttle. The passengers rose as the shuttle settled into place. The Bothan smoothed his tunic, a cheerful blue decorated with a golden sliver pattern suggesting claws.
"Time to go to work. You won't let me get killed, will you?"
Jaina let her eyes widen. "Is that what I was supposed to be doing here?" she asked in droll tones. "I should have brought my lightsaber."
The Bothan offered a long-suffering sigh and turned toward the exit. They descended the shuttle's boarding ramp. With no duties required of her other than to keep alert and to be the Jedi face at this preliminary meeting, Jaina was able to stand back and observe. She was struck with the unreality of it all. The niece and daughter of three of the most famous enemies of the Empire during the First Galactic Civil War of a few decades earlier, she was now witness to events that might bring the Galactic Empire, or Imperial Remnant, as it was called everywhere outside its own borders, into the Galactic Alliance on a lasting basis. And at the center of the plan was the man, flanked by Imperial officers, who now approached the Bothan. Slightly under average size, though towering well above Jaina's diminutive height, he was dark-haired, with a trim beard and mustache that gave him a rakish look, and was handsome in a way that became more pronounced when he glowered. A scar on his forehead ran up to his hairline and seemed to continue as a lock of white hair from that point. He wore expensive but subdued black civilian garments, neck to toe, that would be inconspicuous anywhere on Coruscant, but stood out in sharp relief to the gray and white uniforms, white armor, and colorful alliance clothes surrounding him. He had one moment to glance at Jaina. The look probably appeared neutral to onlookers, but for her, it carried just a twinkle of humor, a touch of exasperation that the two of them had to put up with all these delays. Then an Alliance functionary, notable for his blandness, made introductions.
"Imperial Head of State, the Most Honorable Jaggedfell, may I present Senator Teerg Draeli of Bothui, Head of the Senate Unification Preparations Committee."
Jaggedfell took the Senator's hand.
"I'm pleased to be working with you."
"And delighted to meet you. Chief of State Dala sends her compliments and looks forward to meeting you when you make planetfall."
Jag nodded.
"And now, I believe protocol insists that we open a bottle or a dozen of wine and make some preliminary discussion of security, introduction protocols, and so on."
"Fortunately about the wine, and regrettably about everything else, you are correct."
At the end of two full standard hours, Jaina knew from regular surreptitious consultations of her chrono, Jag was able to convince the senator and his retinue to accept a tour of the Galadpellion. He was also able to request a private consultation with the sole representative of the Jedi Order present. Moments later, the gray-walled conference room was empty of everyone but Jag and Jaina. Jag glanced toward the door.
"Security seal. Access limited to Jaggedfell and Jedi Jaina Solo. Voice identification activate."
The door hissed in response as it sealed. Then Jag returned his attention to Jaina. She let an expression of anger and accusation cross her face.
"You're not fooling anyone, Fell. You're planning for an Imperial invasion of Alliance space."
Jag nodded.
"I've been planning it for quite a while. Come here."
She moved to him, settled into his lap, and was suddenly, but not unexpectedly, caught in his embrace. They kissed urgently, hungrily. Finally, Jaina drew back and smiled at him.
"This isn't going to be a routine part of your consultations with every Jedi."
No. That would cause some trouble here and at home. But I actually do have business with the Jedi that does not involve the Galactic Alliance. At least not initially."
"What sort of business?"
"Whether or not the Galactic Empire joins with the Galactic Alliance, I think there ought to be an official Jedi presence in the Empire. A second temple, a branch, an offshoot, whatever, providing advice and insight to the head of state."
"And protection?"
He shrugged.
"Less of an issue. I'm doing all right. 2 years in this position and not dead yet."
"Emperor Palpatine went nearly 25 years.
"I guess that makes him my hero."
Jaina snorted.
"Don't even say that in jest. Jag, if the Remnant doesn't join the Alliance, I'm not sure the Jedi can have a presence without Alliance approval."
"The Order still keeps its training facility for youngsters in Hapen space, and the Hapens haven't rejoined."
"You sound annoyed. The Hapens still giving you trouble?"
"Let's not talk about that."
"Besides, moving the school back to Alliance space is just a matter of time, logistics, and finances. There's no question that it will happen. On the other hand, it's very likely that the government would withhold approval for a Jedi branch in the Remnant just out of spite if the Remnant doesn't join."
"Well, there's such a thing as an unofficial presence, and there's such a thing as rival schools, schismatic branches, and places for former Jedi to go when they can't be at the temple."
Jaina smiled again, but now there was suspicion in her expression.
"You just want to have this so I'll be assigned to come to the Remnant and set it up."
"That's a motive, but not the only one.
Remember, to the Moffs and to a lot of the Imperial population, the Jedi have been boogeymen since Palpatine died. At the very least, I don't want them to be inappropriately afraid of the woman I'm in love with."
Jaina was silent for a moment.
Have we talked enough politics?
I think so.
Good.
Horn Family Quarters, Galad's Dream Vacation Hostel, Coruscant.
Yawning, hair tousled, clad in a blue dressing robe, Valen Horn knew that he did not look anything like an experienced Jedi Knight. He looked like an unshaven, unkempt bachelor, which he also was. But here, in these rented quarters, there would be only family to see him, at least until he had breakfast, shaved and dressed. The Horns did not live here, of course. His mother, Mirax, was the anchor of the immediate family, manager of a variety of interlinked businesses, trading, interplanetary finances, gambling, and recreation, and, if rumors were true, still a little smuggling here and there. She maintained her home and business address on Corellia. Corrin, her husband, and Valen's father, was a Jedi master. Much of his life spent on missions away from the family, but his true home was where his heart resided, wherever Mirax lived. Valen and his sister Jycella, also Jedi, lived wherever their missions sent them, and also counted Mirax as the center of the family. Now Mirax had rented temporary quarters on Coruscant, so the family could collect on one of its rare occasions. This time for the Unification Summit, where she and Corrin would separately give depositions on the relationships among the Confederation States, the Imperial Remnant, and the Galactic Alliance as they related to trade and Jedi activities. Mirax had insisted that Valen and Jycella leave their temple quarters and stay with their parents while these events were taking place, and few forces in the galaxy could stand before her decision. Luke Skywalker certainly knew better than to try. Moving from the refresher toward the kitchen and dining nook, Valen brushed a lock of brown hair out of his eyes and grinned. Much as he might put up a public show of protest, the independent young man who did not need parents to direct his actions or tell him where to sleep, he hardly minded. It was good to see family, and both Corrin and Mirax were better cooks than the ones at the Jedi Temple. There was no sound of conversation from the kitchen, but there was some clattering of pans, so at least one of his parents must still be on hand. As he stepped from the hallway into the dining nook, Valen saw that it was his mother, her back to him as she worked at the stove. He pulled a chair from the table and sat.
"Good morning."
"A joke so early?"
Mirax did not turn to face him, but her tone was cheerful.
"No morning is good. I come light years from Corellia to be with my family, and what happens? I have to keep Jedi hours to see them. Don't you know that I'm an executive, and a lazy one?"
"I forgot."
Valen took a deep breath, sampling the smells of breakfast. His mother was making hotcakes, Corellian style, Nerf sausage links on the side, and calf was brewing. For a moment, Valen was transported back to his childhood, to the family breakfasts that had been somewhat more common before the Yuuzhan Vong came, before Valen and Jycella had started down the Jedi path.
"Where are Dad and Sella?"
"Your father is out getting some backdoor information from other Jedi Masters for his deposition."
Mirax pulled a plate from a cabinet and began sliding hotcakes and links onto it.
"Your sister left early and wouldn't say what she was doing, which I assume either means it's Jedi business I can't know about, or that she's seeing some man she doesn't want me to know about."
"Or both."
"Or both."
Mirax turned and moved over to put the plate down before him. She set utensils beside it. The plate was heaped high with food, and Valen recoiled from it in mock horror.
"Stang, Mom! You're feeding your son, not a squadron of Gamorreans."
Then he caught sight of his mother's face, and he was suddenly no longer in a joking mood. This wasn't his mother. Oh, the woman had Mirax's features. She had the round face that admirers had called cute far more often than beautiful, much to Mirax's chagrin. She had Mirax's generous, curving lips that smiled so readily and expressively, and Mirax's bright, lively brown eyes. She had Mirax's hair, a glossy black with flecks of gray, worn shoulder length to fit readily under a pilot's helmet, even though she piloted far less often these days. She was Mirax, to every freckle and dimple. But she was not Mirax. The woman, whoever she was, caught sight of Valen's confusion.
"Something wrong?"
No.
Stunned, Valen looked down at his plate. He had to think,
logically, correctly, and fast. He might be in grave danger right now, though the Force currently gave him no indication of imminent attack. The true Mirax, wherever she was, might be in serious trouble, or worse. Valen tried in vain to slow his heart rate and speed up his thinking processes. Fact. Mirax had been here, but had been replaced by an imposter. Presumably the real Mirax was gone. Valen could not sense anyone but himself and the imposter in the immediate vicinity. The imposter had remained behind for some reason that had to relate to Valen, Gisella, or Corin. It couldn't have been to capture Valen, as she could have done that with drugs or other methods while he slept. So the food was probably not drugged. Under Not Mirax's concerned gaze, he took a tentative bite of sausage and turned a reassuring smile he didn't feel toward her. Fact. Creating an imposter this perfect must have taken a fortune in money, an incredible amount of research, and a volunteer willing to let her features be permanently carved into the likeness of another's. Or perhaps this was a clone, raised and trained for the purpose of simulating Mirax. Or maybe she was a droid, one of those very expensive, very rare human replica droids. Or maybe a shapeshifter. Whichever, the simulation was nearly perfect. Valen hadn't recognized the deception until... Until what? What had tipped him off? He took another bite, not registering the sausage's taste or temperature, and maintained the face-hurting smile as he tried to recall the detail that had alerted him that this wasn't his mother. He couldn't figure it out. It was just an instant realization, too fleeting to remember, too overwhelming to reject. Would Corin be able to see through the deception? Would Gisella? Surely they had to be able to. But what if they couldn't? Valen would accuse this woman and be thought insane. Were Corin and Gisella even still at liberty? Still alive? At this moment, the Not Mirax's colleagues could be spiriting the two of them away with the true Mirax. Or Corin and Gisella could be lying bleeding at the bottom of an access shaft, their lives draining away. Valen couldn't think straight. The situation was too overwhelming, the mystery too deep, and the only person here who knew the answers was the one who wore the face of his mother. He stood, sending his chair clattering backward, and fixed the false Mirax with a hard look. Just a moment. He dashed to his room. His lightsaber was still where he'd left it, on the nightstand beside his bed. He snatched it up and gave it a near instantaneous examination. Battery power was still optimal. There was no sign that it had been tampered with. He returned to the dining room with the weapon in his hand. Not Mirax, clearly confused and beginning to look a little alarmed, stood by the stove, staring at him. Valen ignited the lightsaber, its snap hiss of activation startlingly loud, and held the point of the gleaming energy blade against the food on his plate. Hotcakes shriveled and blackened from contact with the weapon's plasma. Valen gave Not Mirax an approving nod. Flesh does the same thing, under the same conditions, you know.
Valen? What's wrong?
You may address me as Jedi Horn. You don't have the right to use my personal name. Valen swung the lightsaber around in a practice form, allowing the blade to come within a few centimeters of the glow rod fixture overhead, the wall, the dining table, and the woman with his mother's face. You probably know from your research that the Jedi don't worry much about amputations. Not Mirax shrank back away from him, both hands on the stove edge behind her.
What?
We know that a severed limb can readily be replaced by a prosthetic that looks identical to the real thing. Prosthetics offer sensation and do everything flesh can. They're ideal substitutes in every way, except for requiring maintenance. So we don't feel too badly when we have to cut the arm or leg off a very bad person. But I assure you, that very bad person remembers the pain forever.
Valen, I'm going to call your father now.
Mirax sidled toward the blue bantha hide carry bag she had left on a side table. Valen positioned the tip of his lightsaber directly beneath her chin. At the distance of half a centimeter, its containing force field kept her from feeling any heat from the blade, but a slight twitch on Valen's part could maim or kill her instantly. She froze. No, you're not. You know what you're going to do instead? Mirax's voice wavered.
What?
You're going to tell me what you've done with my mother! The last several words emerged as a bellow, driven by fear and anger. Valen knew that he looked as angry as he sounded. He could feel blood reddening his face,
could even see redness beginning to suffuse everything in his vision.
"Boy, put the blade down."
Those were not the woman's words. They came from behind. Valen spun, bringing his blade up into a defensive position. In the doorway stood a man, middle-aged, clean-shaven, his hair graying from brown. He was of below-average height, his eyes a startling green. He wore the brown robes of a Jedi. His hands were on his belt, his own lightsaber still dangling from it. He was Valen's father, Jedi Master Corran Horn. But he wasn't, any more than the woman behind Valen was Mirax Horn. Valen felt a wave of despair wash over him. Both parents were replaced. Odds were growing that the real Corran and Mirax were already dead. Yet Valen's voice was soft when he spoke.
"They may have made you a virtual double for my father, but they can't have given you his expertise with the lightsaber."
"You don't want to do what you're thinking about, son."
"When I cut you in half, that's all the proof anyone will ever need that you're not the real Corran Horn."
Valen lunged.
Chapter 2.
Valen swung his blade in a lightning quick circle, low backward to high forward, a move that would cut the imposter in two vertically. The not Corran's lightsaber blade was suddenly alive and raised horizontally, blocking his blow. Like the real Corran's, it shone silver. Perhaps the man had seized the real Corran's weapon. It certainly looked identical. Valen felt his heart sink further. He threw a series of short slashes at not Corran's head, left shoulder and left side, but his opponent blocked each one with minimal arm motion, with little effort. Then the imposter's brown boot was slamming into Valen's chest, hurtling him backward and to his right. Valen crashed down painfully atop the water-filled sink, his ribs bruising against the faucet, his right buttock shattering soaking dishes. Disoriented, he spun his blade in a defensive circle, but not Corran did not immediately follow up. Instead, he was shouting,
"Mirax, out, now!"
And the woman impersonating his mother was leaving the room at a dead run, tears and a bewildered, pained expression on her face. Valen heaved himself off the sink, his rear end wet, and landed on his feet. He pointed his blade at not Corran, an informal salute of grudging respect.
"You've studied. Where?"
"Put the blade away, boy. I don't know what you're seeing or feeling, but we can get people in here whom you trust. We can even get Luke Skywalker here."
"Sure. I'll happily give you time to call your reinforcements. Tactically, that's a good solution for me."
"You make the calls, then."
Valen paused as if hesitating, but took that moment to assess his options. Not Corran was at least as good a swordsman as Valen, and not Mirax was clearly off calling in more help. Soon enough, Valen would be overmatched. To Valen's right were the sink and stove, cabinets above, wall behind. To the left was a wall between him and the living room. Against it stood a sideboard and the small table where Mirax's carry bag rested. Ahead was the only path out of this chamber, and not Corran was in the way. Well, that was all right. In rental quarters like these, lightly constructed for ease of remodeling and for the sake of cheapness, Valen didn't need a door. He darted to the left and boosted his speed with a touch of the Force. He aimed for the open spot between table and sideboard, and the wall there was suddenly wreckage, filling the air with white powder, falling away from him in pieces, barely registering as an impact against Valen's body. It gave way as readily as a flimsy barrier would to a normal man. Now he was in the main living chamber. Ahead was a sofa. In the wall behind it was a large picture viewport with a real waterfall cascading by a few meters beyond. To the right was the door out and another window beside it. Also to the right was a blur. Not Corran in four-speeded motion paralleling him, now between him and the door. Valen didn't alter his trajectory. He dived forward into the viewport, counting on the minimal expense construction of this property to mean that the transparasteel there was thin, or that the mountings holding it to the wall were not the stoutest. He was right on both counts. Again, he barely felt the impact as he punched through the viewport. The thin transparasteel folded around him. Together, they hurtled into sunlight, through the waterfall downpour, and into open air beyond.
Valen exerted himself, throwing the oversized sheet of transparent foil away, and dropped into what looked like a bottomless city canyon, bordered on two sides by soaring, gaudily decorated banks of sky towers. This was a vacationer's district, the vast lengths of skyrises occupied mostly by hostels, restaurants, spas, and other businesses catering to travelers and celebrants from all over Coruscant and the Alliance. The gap separating this bank of sky towers from the one facing it was about 30 meters wide, farther than his leap would carry him, but there were multiple streams of speeder traffic above and below. As he dropped, he took note of a blue and yellow striped speeder approaching below. He twisted, angling toward it, and he came down on the hood of the vehicle, landing in a deep crouch. The front end of the speeder dipped precipitously under the force of his impact. The pilot was an Ortolan, rotund and blue-skinned, his broad ears and snout suddenly being snapped back by the wind. Valen saw the pilot's eyes open wide. The repulsor lift of the speeder shrieked under the sudden demand imposed by Valen's landing. It tried to bring the speeder's nose back up. It succeeded, and as it did, Valen sprang up and forward, leaping as far as the opposite traffic lane. There, he came down atop a long bus, which did not budge under his landing. Valen flipped forward again, somersaulting, and this time landed on the deck of an open-air tourist conveyance that was beginning to fill up with vacationers boarding via a short ramp from the adjacent hostel patio. The vacationers started with surprise at the sudden appearance of a drenched, insufficiently clothed Jedi with a live lightsaber in his hand. Valen couldn't keep anger and a little panic out of his voice.
"I need a comlink, quick!"
He held out his hand. The few seconds that followed crawled like an eternity, but gave Valen time to think, to wonder. The vacationers and tourists boarding this vehicle were, to all outward appearance, ordinary beings of the middle class. Most of them were dressed in garments far more colorful, revealing, or both, than they would ever wear at home. They seemed normal, but how many of them, too, might be imposters? He had no sense whatsoever of the scale of this deception. One of them, a beautiful red-skinned Twi'lek woman, finished struggling to unclip something from her white halter top. She extended the object toward Valen, her hand open. It was a comlink. He reached for it. Nott Corran thumped shoulders first into the deck and rolled onto his feet 4 meters from Valen. His own lightsaber was in hand, but unlit. His voice, raised so all on the vehicle could hear, sounded sad, pained.
"Everybody stand back. This man is... not well. I'll handle this."
Valen gestured at Nott Corran.
"You're not well. You're conspiring against the Jedi Order, and you should know that's a dangerous, usually fatal mistake."
He called on inner resources, on memories of scores of battles endured and won. He let those memories fill him and push out the panic and anguish he'd been feeling. New calmness quieting and deepening his voice, he said,
"All right. Your decision. Your fate. I'm just going to cut my way through you and then go find out who's behind this."
Again, he sprang at the man who was not his father. This time, no concern for self-preservation affected his tactics. He went completely on the offensive, his sole goal to cut down Nott Corran. He threw blow after blow with stuttered laser speed, backing Nott Corran up against the vehicle rail, then down the ramp to the hostel's patio restaurant beyond. Restaurant patrons scattered, leaving tables loaded with half-finished meals, drinks, and bags. Nott Corran did not take advantage of a couple of openings Valen's tactics offered him. Valen felt a surge of optimism. Nott Corran's adherence to the True Corran's loyalties clearly meant he would not cut Valen down. Valen did not feel the same consideration toward his enemy. And though Valen was tiring, Nott Corran had it worse. The older man was beginning to sweat. Nott Corran backflipped to the far side of a round white table made of light durasteel. As he landed, he kicked the table toward Valen. Valen ignored the dishes and food hurtling toward him. He slashed at the table itself, cleaving it in two. Had he possessed the full range of Jedi powers, he could have swept it aside with an exertion of telekinesis, but like his father, he was deficient in that ability. Nott Corran now stood 5 meters away, breathing heavily, his blade at a single-handed downward defensive angle. Valen gave him a look of grudging admiration. You know to exhibit all the Jedi skills but refrain from using telekinesis so that you can maintain the impersonation shows a lot of dedication. Too bad it won't get you anything. Too bad you have to die.
Boy, this has got to end.
Not Corin threw up his free hand, as if finally to make a telekinetic attack. Valen hesitated, not sure which way to jump. Then he realized something bad. Not Corin hadn't used any force power, but had, through his gesture, frozen Valen in place just for an instant. Valen felt a sensation of imminent danger. Then it hit him. A blow from behind. A shock felt by every part of his body. His knees gave way. He fell backward, his vision graying. But before he lost consciousness completely, he saw, beyond the railing of the patio, a hovering airspeeder, his mother's speeder, with Not Mirak standing in the driver's seat, her military-grade blaster pistol in her hands aimed at him. Tears streamed from her eyes, as if to mimic the artificial waterfall that framed her from 30 meters beyond.
Senate Building, Coruscant.
Luke Skywalker found it amazing that there was a chamber this large in the Senate building he had never seen. It was 6 stories in height, and broad and deep enough to hold 2,000 spectators. The permanent bench seating was filled almost to capacity, late arrivals moving along the aisles and peering anxiously to find open spots. At the head of the chamber stood an enormous dais with 2 cloth-draped tables, swivel seats set up behind them, and a lectern between them. On the carpeted floor before the dais were round tables with chairs placed to face the front of the room. It was much like an oversized courtroom set up for a panel of judges, but more informal in its arrangement, and far less somber in its decorative style. The carpets and padding on the bench seats and backs were of soothing blues and purples. The walls were off-white, with Galactic Alliance symbols painted large upon them. And the furniture up front was an unthreatening tan gold. And Luke had never seen the place before. Had it always been here? Were there many more such chambers in this gargantuan building? The dais tables were fully occupied, and the male Bothan sitting in the most central chair, his red and tan fur rippling with the consequence of the moment, nodded to an aide who had just whispered to him. The Bothan stood and took the lectern beside his seat.
"Only 45 minutes late,"
he said, his amplified voice booming across the chamber.
"Not bad for a Galactic Alliance event, yes?"
His remark drew a faint laugh from the crowd. Encouraged, he continued.
"I am Senator Teer Drayley, Chair of the Unification Preparations Committee and the organizer of this event. Over the next several days, in both private and public sessions, we will be examining the relationship between the Galactic Alliance, the States of the Confederation, the Galactic Empire, and individual planet states with the aim of restoring our great planetary union to levels of strength and security equaling, even surpassing those it enjoyed before the recent war."
Ben, Luke's 16-year-old son, sat to Luke's left. Red-headed, athletic, he was dressed in the black tunic and pants that were his trademark.